You're listening to West Virginia Morning. I'm John Cantese. A bill to increase taxes and fees to fund highway maintenance and construction projects is now in doubt after a decision to remove the bill from the House Finance Committee agenda yesterday. The committee's chair, Eric Nelson, pulled Senate Bill 555. As approved in the Senate, the bill adds a trigger to increase the state's gasoline tax by 3 cents when the wholesale price of gas of a gallon drops below $2. But the bill also generates dollars from the state road fund by increasing division of motor vehicle fees and the tax on purchasing a vehicle. The bill would raise nearly $350 million in highway funding, but Nelson told the committee there wasn't enough interest in the bill to continue considering it. The road funding bill was the last revenue-increasing measure being considered by lawmakers this session. The House Finance Committee has already killed a bill to increase the state's tobacco tax to help balance the budget. It is possible Senate Bill 555 could resurface on the committee's agenda, but to be passed in the full House by Saturday, the committee would have to approve the bill today. That is, unless lawmakers agree to suspend the rules of the chamber and move the bill more quickly through the voting process on the floor. The House of Delegates will vote on a bill today that would require drug testing for recipients of temporary assistance for needy families. Liz McCormick reports.
Senate Bill 6 requires the West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources to apply for permission from the federal government to begin a drug screening and testing program. In that program, applicants for temporary assistance for needy families or TANF benefits could be tested if there's reasonable suspicion those applicants are using drugs or if they've been convicted of a drug crime in the past 3 years. The bill creates a three-strike system within the program. After one failed drug test, the TANF recipient does not lose any benefits, but must enter a rehabilitative or workforce training program. After the second failed test, the recipient loses benefits for 1 year or until completion of the workforce or rehabilitative program. After a third failed test, he or she loses benefits for life. In any step in the process, the benefits given to children in the home will not be taken away. The DHHR is required to find another adult to distribute the benefits to, just like they do in other programs. Delegates considered four amendments to the bill during a floor session Tuesday night. All four amendments were proposed by Democrats. The first of those amendments would have removed marijuana from the list of drugs that could cause an applicant to lose his or her benefits. Delegate Mike Pushkin of Kanawha County argued it would save money for the state if they removed that provision from the bill, considering there are nearby states where marijuana use is legal. However, House Judiciary Chairman John Schott spoke in opposition to the amendment, saying the bill itself is not about saving money.
The bill is not to save money. I think everybody's under the impression that that's the only reason for the bill. The bill is to identify and help folks that need help. And if you're able to identify a person, you don't discontinue the benefits. You just simply try to help them. The money you save if you get that person off of drugs, whether it be marijuana or any other drugs, will be hard to measure, but certainly invaluable.
The amendment was rejected. Two more amendments were ruled not relevant to the bill. One of them would have required state lawmakers to be drug tested. If a legislator would have failed that test, he or she would have been required to enter a drug treatment program and would lose their pay. The other amendment would have expanded the drug testing program beyond just those who are applying for TANF benefits to any person who is applying for funding from the state, including the officers of private companies. But both amendments were ruled not relevant by House Speaker Tim Armstead. The final amendment considered would have required the DHHR to obtain a warrant for the drug test from a judge. Delegate Barbara Fleshour championed the amendment.
There would have to be an affidavit from the caseworker or a designated officer with knowledge of the facts, sworn before the judge in establishing the grounds for the warrant. And grounds could include the results of the drug screen, convictions within the past 3 years, observations of the caseworker, or any other information volunteered during the application or which is publicly available. I think that adoption of this amendment is the only way to make this constitutional.
However, the amendment was rejected. Senate Bill 6 will be up for a vote in the House Wednesday. A recent poll of likely West Virginia voters found 77% supported drug testing welfare recipients. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick in Charleston.
You're listening to West Virginia morning. It is 7:49. Today's going to be mostly sunny with highs in the 70s and low 80s. And tonight's going to be a little cloudier with lows in the 50s.
Support for the weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com.
Three out of four people do not take their prescription medication as directed, and one out of three people never fill their prescriptions, according to a national group that tracks such information. As Carol Lofton reports, several schools of health professionals, including students from the University of Charleston Pharmacy School, are trying to increase awareness about this issue.
At a senior center in Ravenswood, students from the University of Charleston Pharmacy School are holding a health fair. I stopped to talk to one of the participants.
So what is she about to do with you?
She's going to test my sugar.
That was Betty Smith. She is 80 years old and says she isn't a diabetic, but still likes to get her blood sugar tested. The health fair is the easiest way to do that since students come to her, and the services they offer at this fair they are testing blood pressure too are free. The fair is just one of 23 events the UC Pharmacy students have held over the past 2 months as part of Script Your Future, a nationwide medication adherence campaign. The campaign also includes seminars on yoga for disease management, healthy meal planning for disease management, and a run for Women's Health 5K. This is the fourth year UC Pharmacy School students have participated in the campaign. The fair at Ravenswood is an alternative spring break trip for the students. Carrie Jungle is an assistant professor at the UC School of Pharmacy. She says medication non-adherence is
not taking your medications as prescribed. So that can include not taking your medications at all, splitting your medications in half, like splitting the pill in half even though you're not supposed to, skipping a day because you're trying to save money, even storing your medications in the wrong place.
Such as the bathroom, which Jungle says is too humid for most medications. Room temperature is usually ideal. Melissa Busey is a fourth-year UC pharmacy student. She said there are four main reasons people don't take medications as prescribed. One, they don't understand how medication works. Two, they're worried about side effects. Three, they can't afford prescriptions. And four, they forget to take their medications. The result?
Poor medication adherence actually has a huge financial implication in the United States every year, and it gets into the billions of dollars.
Actually, about $290 billion are spent each year in avoidable healthcare cost related to medication non-adherence, i.e. emergency department visits, hospitalizations, and pharmacy costs, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. It also causes about 125,000 deaths a year, according to a 2012 study in Annals of Internal Medicine. Booz says she thinks that's because a lot of patients are afraid to ask questions of their doctors or pharmacist because they often feel their medical provider doesn't have time for them.
So then they don't really know what to expect for the medications or don't know how important it is that they take them correctly, and so then they just don't do it.
She says if a patient can't afford a medication or feels like what they're taking isn't working, they should talk to their doctor or pharmacist, not just stop taking it. Research published late last year for the National Script Your Future campaign found that improved communication between patients and healthcare providers does lead to more patients taking prescribed medications as directed. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Carol Lofton.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, with support from the Benedum Foundation.
Is the Northern Panhandle experiencing an economic rebirth? Glennis Board reports that there's more than one resident working toward that goal. One of them says his goal is to see every abandoned factory that lines the Ohio River Valley repurposed.
53-year-old Patrick Ford has vivid memories of growing up in rural Bueller, Kansas. He remembers seeing family farms become obsolete with the rise of corporate farms. It was an economic shift that happened fast. He remembers as a kid, for fun, walking through abandoned homes.
TV would still be there. Photo albums. I mean, there was one where the spectacles that this old man wore was still on the table. How do you tell your son and your daughter that we can't farm anymore and we gotta move. When they've been farming for generations.
Ford says that scene of an abandoned life is burned into his memory. It shocked him as a young man that no one planned for the economic shift. There was no transition. That's part of what motivates his work today. For the past 7 years, Ford has been the executive director of the Business Development Corporation of the Northern Panhandle. The mission of the private nonprofit is to foster a diverse economy in Brook and Hancock counties. Ford says he's part of a renaissance in the Northern Panhandle. He sat with me in his office building in Weirton in front of a whiteboard that lists some 30 priority projects his organization is focused on, ranging from helping a small bakery open its doors to repurposing the former pottery plant, Taylor, Smith, and Taylor. Ford says it's his goal to see new businesses taking over the abandoned mills that line the Ohio River Valley. And he says he's not alone.
Every single day I get up, I know that there's someone in the city of Charleston, at the West Virginia Economic Development Authority, the West Virginia Development Office, the Governor's Office, the Secretary of Commerce. I know the Benenum Foundation and Northern West Virginia Brownfields Assistance Center. I know the Hancock County Commission, the Brook County Commission, the mayors. I know now everybody is waking up with that on their mind right now. Now, I don't know if that's like that for the entire state, but I sure the hell know that it's happening right here because every one of those people are plugged in to what's happening right here. And that gives this whole community hope.
Ford ultimately wants to attract big business. He wants to revitalize the industrial age in the valley. Ford remembers 5 years ago when his organization landed a $250,000 grant from the U.S. Economic Development Administration to prepare an economic adjustment strategy. After considering the assets of the region, like location, workforce, and existing infrastructure, consultants indicated that the valley was ripe for 5 business clusters: chemical, energy, metal, transportation, and healthcare.
When we got that message 5 years ago, we thought, yeah, great. Here's the $200,000, and thank you for the recommendation. But you know what? You paid for that, so you got to blindly believe and just, okay, this is what they said we needed to do. This is the who we need to go after. Let's do it.
No sooner had they received these recommendations than the shale gas boom started. Ford says it was a lucky break that played right into the region's hands. And he isn't dissuaded by the lull in that sector we've witnessed over the last year. He says revitalization is happening regardless and will continue to happen because there's a more diversified approach to economic redevelopment. But the challenge his organization and others like it face now is securing the flat land that lines the Ohio River Valley. Ford says mostly we're talking about abandoned, contaminated mills, brownfields. It's challenging and expensive to acquire and clean sites. But that's exactly what the Business Development Corporation is focused on.
You know, you look at the numbers and we've got $40 million a year investment coming in over the past 4 years. And we're the two smallest counties in the state of West Virginia. You know, that tells me one thing. We might be small, but we're fighters, and we're going to make a difference, and we have as a community.
Ford and the Business Development Corporation of the Northern Panhandle are working with many community groups, local banks, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and a few other groups to secure the grants and loans necessary to tackle the blight and work towards economic rebirth. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Glynis Board in Weirton.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with all of the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. And make sure you send your feedback to feedback@wvpublic.org. And you can follow us on Twitter @WVPublicNews and find us on Facebook. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting's news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ashton Mara. Our director is Teresa Wills. And I'm John Cantese. Have a good morning.